did consider their material bodies, they think, this is me. And when they consider their progeny and other relations, they think, these are mine. No purport again. You are not our sons, but the very laws of both the material nature and its creator, Mahavishnu. As you yourself have told us, you have descended to rid the earth of rulers who are a heavy burden upon her. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, in this verse, Vasudeva offers himself and his wife as examples of those who are materially deluded. Although at the time of his birth in Kamsa's prison, Lord Krishna told Vasudeva and Devaki that his mission was to rid the earth of unwanted Kshatriyas. Still, his two parents could not avoid thinking him as their helpless son, who needed protection from King Kamsa. In reality, of course, both Vasudeva and Devaki were participating in the divine pastime of the Lord's birth under the perfect direction of his internal energy. Only out of transcendental humility does Vasudeva criticize himself in this way. In the final translation, therefore, O friend of the distressed, I now approach your lotus feet for shelter. The same lotus feet that dispel fear of all worldly existence for those who have surrendered to them. Enough, enough with the hankering for sense enjoyment, which makes me identify with this material body, and think of you, the Supreme, as my child. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami suggests that Vasudeva condemns himself here for thinking of trying to gain special opulences because he is the father of the Supreme Lord. Thus Vasudeva contrasts himself with Nanda, the king of Vraj, who was satisfied with pure love of God and nothing else. Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Vasai Bhutale Shimati Hridai Nanda Goswami Niti Namine. Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Vasai Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Vacharani Nevise Shishinivari Pashachade Shitane. Shri Krishna Jaitana Prabhu Nichananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the first verse, by good fortune a soul may attain a healthy human life, an opportunity rarely achieved, but if he is nonetheless deluded about what is best for him, O Lord, your illusory maya will cause him to waste his entire life. So the human form of life is a very, very special birth. It takes a long time to get to this human form of life. We've been in all sorts of species throughout our existence, and now we've achieved the human form of life. And this is so rare, as is pointed out by the Shastras, so rare to be not only in the human form of life, but in a healthy human form of life. If you're not stricken by illness, whether physical or mental illness, as was mentioned in Keshava's class some days ago about how there are so many people in this world that are suffering from mental illnesses. What was it that he was saying? It was practically 99% of people in the world have some mental problem, which is true. Even amongst the devotees, we all have our little quirks, so to speak. Some people have little funny quirks. So to be in a human form of life, to be healthy, is so rare. You know, that we're not stricken with any sort of sickness, that we're not infirmed or have a disability, to be able to function properly, is rare. And not to be stricken with abject poverty, that you're wondering where you're going to get your next meal from, that we're not starving, we're not afflicted by material energy from outside. You know, just recently people have been suffering so much in Burma because of the typhoon that hit there. Millions of people have been displaced thousands and thousands of people have been killed. So even though they had their human form of life, it was just like a fleeting moment and it's all over. So to get this human form of life is a very special thing. It's a very rare thing. You don't get a chance to be born in a human very often. So when we do get an opportunity, we have to make the most of it. We have to really make an effort that we don't spoil this human form of life. We don't spoil this good fortune that has become us. To waste a wife and to waste a whole life in delusion is a sad thing. We see so often the whole material world is geared about deluding us. set up that way, actually. As is mentioned here in the purport, that Krishna came, one of the missions that Krishna had was to rid the world of unwanted kshatriyas, leaders, that delude the people into thinking that they should waste their life. And they do. All the leaders of today's society, every single one, is geared towards deluding the general populace into wasting their life. The last thing that the leaders of the world want you to do is to become spiritually surcharged, to actually make the most use of your life. They're bent on keeping you in ignorance. They're bent on deluding you. Demoniac mentality. So Krishna was here to destroy them. And in this lifetime, in this age, in this Kali Yuga, he has come again to destroy these kshatriyas, these leaders, and he's come in the sound and vibration of his holy name. I just heard, did you make an announcement just before about the kirtan, that we have to, yeah. What was it? I was outside chanting, so.
Yeah, the noise level becoming too much, like the council are monitoring us.
Are they really?
The police are, yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Here we go again. Because of the enthusiastic chanting by these young brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, that they're fired up to actually disturb those deluded souls into waking up into some spiritual fervour, all of a sudden these demoniac leaders go, hey, hang on a dick, you can't do this, you can't disturb the status quo, you can't take these people out of their ignorance. You have to tone that down a bit. You know, religion is okay in this nice little place over here in a little box. You go on your Sunday and you do your little worship. But don't you start waking up people. Don't you start changing people's ideas about spirituality. No, 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 that is not our plan. So these deluded demons, they actually have a plan to keep us completely in ignorance. They keep people working in factories from 9 to 5. And then, to delude them even more, they say, okay, let's give them footy matches. Let's give them sport to completely distract them. Completely distract them. You know, they have state of origin, this state against that state. And what's the latest thing that they've got in the AFL? It's something about Victoria against the Dream Team. And so everybody, yeah, I'm part of the Dream Team. Oh, I'm part of Victoria. And they're completely deluded about the suffering that they're going through day after day, working and so on and so forth. Some people keep them completely deluded. The leaders keep them deluded. And they keep them deluded by providing plenty of intoxication so they can drink a lot and dull their brains. And this is what's going on. So the world is bound up in this illusion. And the other point that is being made here is that they're bound up also by this attachment to one's children. Firstly, attachment to one's country, one's football team. And even as devotees, we jokingly have that, you know. Devotees don't take it so seriously, but some devotees, you know, oh, you know, what team are you? Be like, oh, yeah, I'm an old Collingwood supporter. Oh, good on you, Prabhu, you know. Because sometimes we used to go and do Sankirtan, you know, and we would be rapt if we could go and do Sankirtan at a team that you used to barrack for. Oh, great. Or the cricket or something like that. So it's deep within us. So a person is affectionately bound up to one's country, a club or an association one's attached to, and also one's family, one's progeny, children. They're the greatest attachment. It's amazing how deep the roots of attachment go. And there's so many times we hear about people going to Saturday football, they take their children to the football and they become irate parents, you know, aggressive parents, that their children are not performing well or the umpire has done a bad decision to one of their children and they go berserk and start punching out the opposition or the umpire or the other people that are supporting or whatever. So even as devotees, you know, we have children, we bring children into this world, that affection is there, that attachment is there. Prabhupada said that that's fine. But we have to keep a check on it as well. Because I noticed recently my son was playing for, he plays mixed netball and he's in the Victorian team playing against Interstate. And he said, Prabhu, come and quickly come and watch Dad, come and check us out, we're playing for Victoria. I said, okay. So I went down there and before too long, you know, you go, go for it, you know, he's filling up the goal, you know, that's my boy, you know, he's you like that, you know. So it's a natural sort of instinct. But we have to keep it, we have to keep it in perspective and really balance our life. Affection should be there, and to be proud of your children should be there, but it should also be directed in a Krishna conscious way. So it's mentioned here the Lord is Artabandhano, friend of the distressed, in the purport here. So the same lotus feet that dispel this, the same lotus feet that set up this whole situation can dispel this ignorance as well. And it's simply done, as Vasudeva is pointing out here, by being surrendered. By being surrendered, by giving up. And it's an interesting point here. This is such a nice translation, where it's said that Vasudeva says, enough! Enough with this hankering for sense enjoyment. There's an enough period in all our lives, isn't there? That's why we're sitting here in the temple room today. There was a point in our lives where we've said, enough is enough. I've had enough of material world. I want something else. And we start seeking that other thing, that spiritual nectar. And so we turn to Krishna in surrender. We've had enough, and by the mercy of the spiritual master, he's given us a direction, and now we surrender to Krishna through the spiritual master, and we start rendering service. We start surrendering our lives to him. And then what happens at that point, Krishna starts dispelling our attachments, starts dispelling this abhadra, this attachment to these unwanted things. And Krishna actually is an incredibly powerful cleansing agent. Said in Bhagavad Gita, Param Brahman, Param Dharma, Pavitram Param Bhavan. Arjuna says, you, O Supreme Lord, are the ultimate, the supreme abode, the purifier, the truth, the infinite purity. And contact with you brings about ultimate cleansing of both the body, mind and intelligence. So Krishna is so pure that just by mere contact, just a slight contact with Krishna has a purifying effect, a cleansing effect, cleanses the mirror of our heart. So thereby these demons, they see us chanting enthusiastically, and anybody that's seen the Kirtan party, sometimes I watch from Gopal's window, you know, you see the Kirtan party, it is so purifying. It's so incredibly uplifting. When in the early days, when you used to hear the kirtan in the streets before I was a devotee, you know, you'd hear just off in the distance, straight away your heart is lifted and you feel cleansed, you know. So the process of this chanting is so important. When you see enthusiastic devotees carrying on like this and chanting, it's a cleansing effect. It's purifying, and it purifies all those conditioned souls that just hear a slight whisper of the holy name of Krishna. They're becoming purified. And so Krishna is the ultimate cleansing agent. He's the ultimate cleansing agent. He cleans our mind and intelligence, our everything. So when we say, for example, if we dance for Krishna in kirtan, we're cleansing our bodily functions. We're cleansing that facility. Our anatomy is being cleansed. The materialist may dance in ecstasy or partial ecstasy at a disco or an induced ecstasy at a disco or a club, but devotees just dance out of pure ecstasy for love of God, just the bliss of being with him. So similarly, dancing, we eat in ecstasy, we're utilizing the eating propensity to actually take Krishna within. We talk about Krishna, we sing about Krishna. All these are offerings to Krishna. Every single one of them are offerings to Krishna. And this offering process is so beautiful that it is satisfying to the nth degree. There was a really interesting section in the Bhagavad Gita which I wanted to read to you just in regards to this section that we've just read in Bhagavatam. It's in the 4th chapter, 24. And if I may, I'll just read that out because there's a terrific purport by Prabhupada there. And the translation is, a person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consumption is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Purport by his divine grace, how activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness and all of them will be described in the following verses. But, for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. A conditioned soul, entangled in material contamination, is sure to act in a material atmosphere. And yet, he has to get out of such an environment The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curds. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness as set forth here in the Gita. This process is generally known as yajna, where activities, sacrifices, simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna. The more activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. Brahma means spiritual, Brahman means spiritual. The Lord is spiritual and the rays of his transcendental body are called Brahmajyoti, his spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahmajyoti, and when the jyoti is covered by illusion, maya, or sense gratification, it is called material. The material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness, thus offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness. The consuming agent of such an offering are contributions, the process of consumption, the contributor, the results are all combined together, Brahman or the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth covered by Maya is called matter. Matter dovetailed for the Absolute Truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna or sacrifice for the Absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, the performer or the leader of the performance, the result or the ultimate gain, everything becomes one in the Absolute, the Supreme Brahman. This is the method of Krishna consciousness. So I was thinking yesterday, you know, we had such an absolutely wonderful fire jugger here for the wedding of Simon and his wife. Sacrifices are very, very important. And everything we do as a Krishna conscious devotee becomes a sacrifice to the Supreme. But sometimes we have these fire yajnas. And in the fire yajna, we're offering everything to the fire. Now, throughout different cultures throughout the world, this fire sacrifice has been a prominent feature. Many, many different cultures use this fire as a means of offering something for the Lord. So the fire is actually seen as devouring the foodstuffs or devouring whatever offering we've made, and when it's devoured we understand that God has taken our offering. In the Inca tradition, they threw young virgin women into the fire as an offering to the Lord. In many different cultures they have very different things of thinking what God would like. Even in the Old Testament we had where Abraham, was it Abraham who had to sacrifice his son to the Lord? He felt that he had to sacrifice his son as a show of surrender to the Lord. And in the end, apparently the Lord said, "Oh, look, offer that sheep that's over there." Very, very low class. But in these cultures, they feel that somehow or other we have to offer grains, we have to offer things in the fire, and that's our means of surrendering and offering to the Lord. In the Vedic culture, we offer ghee, which is purified butter. And that purified quality actually is given to the fire. The fire that we have in our yajna is Sipivista, tongue of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu. And by offering that, the Lord is satisfied. So this was going on at this wedding sacrifice. And what happens is, at that, as is pointed out in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, both the offering becomes absolute, the person that the fire is absolute, the person that's offering the yajna becomes absolute, and it's said that at the end of the performance, that personality that's making the offering, and that person that's making the offering, is making the offering on behalf of the congregation, or the couple that was there at that stage, and their family, and the congregation. All of those people who are witnessing this yajna also become absolute, linked with Krishna, and actually have the greatest benefit, whereby at the end they will also go back to the abode of the Supreme, of the Absolute. So the trick in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada was pointing in that purport, is that we have to be mindful that everything we do is a sacrifice to Krishna. Every aspect of our life has to be a sacrifice to Krishna, with body, mind and soul. To be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness at all times and just surrender everything to the Lord. So we may be doing any type of work, if we dedicate it towards Krishna wholeheartedly, using our senses, using our limbs, using everything in the service of Krishna, it becomes completely fulfilling because of that connection with the Supreme Lord. And then there's that attachment thing again also, as far as the kids are concerned, our progeny, our family. And the same thing, if we offer our children to the Supreme Lord, if we understand that our children come through us, but actually they don't belong to us, and if we sacrifice even our attachment, even our love for our children, in the sacrifice of Krishna consciousness, it will be great for you and it will also be great for the child. So you do that by instructing your children in the art of Krishna consciousness, by training them to be good devotees, by giving them right knowledge and bringing them to the temple to associate with other devotees and to worship in that way. So that way, your progeny also becomes connected to Krishna and also flourishes. But a parent, in the same token, knows that there is only so much that a parent can do. And ultimately, it's up to the individual child and their karma whether they want to continue on in Krishna consciousness. But if you've given the ground basis, if you've given the basic sort of instruction at a very early age, and you've surrendered your children to the Supreme Absolute by training them properly, in the ultimate end, when they grow, there will come a time when that knowledge will come back and they will say, yeah, actually, Mum and Dad were correct. You know, Krishna consciousness is the way of living. And then they start to break out of their delusion. And sometimes, you know, we become a little bit upset if our children don't necessarily follow the path of Krishna consciousness directly. But, in the same token, we have to be mindful that everybody travels their own path, and in due course of time, with Krishna's help, they will come back to this understanding. And so, we have to really allow our children to grow in their own light. So Krishna is directing, as is pointed out here, also the karma of all the living entities. And there is one verse in Brahma Samhita, text 54, Yastrindra Gopa Matavendra Mahosva Karma Bandhana Rupam Palabhajam Anantamoti Kamhari Nirahati Kintu Chabakti Vajam Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So there, Krishna is directing the play of karma for everyone. He's from the insect, the lowest little insect that we see walking around. He has his karma that has decided that he is a little insect. And also to the King of Heaven, Indra. Krishna is directing all the karma. So intricate. Why is that little ant a little ant? Why is the King of Heaven the King of Heaven? You know, there are so many intricacies. Like, say, for example, when Gangeshwar was giving that class yesterday about the guy that was mowing the lawns underneath the Westgate Bridge, and the tyre came off the truck driving on the Westgate Bridge and hit him and he died. I mean, all these things. Why did the typhoon hit so many people in Burma? Just in Burma, you know? Why didn't it hit Thailand or somewhere else, but just in this one section? So it's all karma. So Krishna is pointing out that he's actually the orchestrator of the karma within this universe. But in that verse of Brahma Samhita, it also says that there's a however factor, you know. However, if a person surrenders to me, if a person surrenders to the Supreme Lord, if a person surrenders to Govinda, all this karma will be burnt up. He will burn it up. It's like an offering. It'll be taken away. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. Even though we're in a deluded state and a very pitiful state, actually, because we're just riddled with karma. Every action, again, what Kaikshava was saying, every action that we do has a reaction. But then when we're in Krishna consciousness, Krishna says, pay no mind to that. You're karma free. You just go and do service to me. But the trick is that you have to be 100% surrendered to the Holy Name, to the Supreme Lord. This is imperative. So, Krishna burns up all our karma. And Krishna, by nature, we can understand, is then very good-hearted. He has a very good heart. He has a very loving attitude to all the fallen conditioned souls. So much so that he actually accompanies every living entity, just waiting for that person to no longer be deluded, to get to the enough stage, you know, to get to the stage where Vasudeva is saying here. And he reiterates it. He doesn't just say enough of this material world. He says enough! Enough of this material world. I want to get out of this material world. Can everybody remember that particular time in your life when it actually hit you that you just said, enough! Now I want the truth. Now I want to know the truth. There's often times that you may again be diverted, but there comes a time when it's actually the enough time. And then you start being serious about getting free from this material delusion. So the Lord is a well-wisher. He is a good-hearted personality. He just wants the best for his children, for his associates. Because that's what we are. We're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. We belong with him. And everything about the Absolute is purifying. And in particular, his holy name. Krishna's holy name is totally purifying, as we were mentioning before. The demons become upset when we're chanting purely. If you were doing a mediocre kirtan, if the devotees were doing a mediocre kirtan, not enthusiastic, do you think the materialists would be too upset? No, let them go, they're not into it anyway. They can see that the devotees are actually into it. And the potency of the holy name is so strong. So throughout history again, the power of the holy name has been recorded. In other religions as well, besides Krishna consciousness, besides the Vedic tradition, besides Vaishnavism, in other traditions as well, the holy name has been actually held up to a high extent. And for a classic example, even in the Buddhist tradition where they have a Mayavada understanding, an impersonalist understanding, still they place a great emphasis on the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. In the Christian tradition, there's obviously, you know, the prayer that Jesus said, Lord Jesus said, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. In the Old Testament, also in the early scriptures, you had, you know how David was the founder of the Jewish tradition, one of the principal fathers of the Jewish tradition. And he set up a temple. Well, he didn't actually. It was his son, Solomon, because he couldn't do it. He was not allowed to build a temple to the Lord. So he got his son, Solomon, to build a temple of the Lord. And it was so opulent. It was one of the most opulent structures in the world at that time. It was, you know, it had beautiful marble columns and all this kind of stuff. And Solomon, who was an immensely wealthy king, built this temple in honour of the holy name of the Lord. This temple was to honour the holy name of the Lord. So this is in the Jewish tradition. And then you have Jesus with hallowed be thy name. These are not just idle things. These are actually true knowledge. So in Vaishnavism we know the potency of the holy name, but this holy name actually purifies everything that it comes in contact with. Anybody hears any pastimes about Krishna, if one hears just subtly the name of Krishna mentioned once, it's uplifting and it's purifying. So the goal of life is to dedicate oneself to just being absorbed totally in the non-deluded, purely Krishna-conscious consciousness. Krishna consciousness is actually a now consciousness. Now I wanted to have a discussion about this, about being Krishna conscious means to be Krishna conscious now. Krishna consciousness is not something from the past and not something for the future. Krishna consciousness is something that is immediate, is now. And a devotee, if a devotee wants to be Krishna conscious, a person should be now conscious. So that means that we have instructions from Guru that we should live a sinless life. So we live a sinless life now, that we live a devoted life now, that we live a life of surrender now, not in the past and not in the future. Sometimes you have devotees that reminisce about the old days. Oh, back in the 70s, you know, boy, it was so much easier to be Krishna conscious. I was really Krishna conscious then. You know, we were fired up, but now, you know. And then you have other people that say, you know, well, you know, I can't be Krishna conscious now, but in the future, I'll be Krishna conscious. I'll really make an effort when I'm 60 or 75, then I'll really push it, you know. I'll be really Krishna conscious. But the trick to Krishna consciousness is to be Krishna conscious now, right now, every second. Because all those other things, the past and the future, the past and the future are just shadows. They don't exist. They're not a reality. The only reality that exists is right here and now, that split second, right now, right now, right now. And if you strive, and don't delude yourself, if you strive to be Krishna conscious at every moment of the day, then you'll be in absolute perfection. If you absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness at every second of the day, you'll be in Krishna consciousness. You cannot deviate from it. And then what happens is, the process makes you absolute. You're with Krishna. So the trick is that, and it's not something that's easily done, but it's a method that we can start developing in our consciousness. To start living our Krishna consciousness at every moment. Like say, for example, if we get an opportunity to do some service, we can say, yes, Prabhu, I'll help you straight away. If someone comes up and asks you, Prabhu, could you do this for me? I need, or can you do an arki, or can you do this, or could you dress the deities? The now consciousness says, yes, I can do that now. I can make advancement now if I do this. Another person may say, oh no, look, can you see me after I take rest? You've missed the opportunity. It's putting something in the past, in the future. Similarly, we can learn Krishna consciousness now. Say, for example, we have an opportunity. We have a 10-minute space of time between doing some service. We can say, oh, I'll go and take rest. Or we can say, okay, I want to be Krishna conscious now, I want to stay in this now consciousness, and grab a Bhagavad Gita or a Bhagavad Gita and read. And then you're in that now consciousness. So it's imperative that we see it like that, that we have this opportunity to be in the Krishna consciousness now. Similarly, when a sinful activity comes up in our consciousness, because we're conditioned souls, we've gone through so many lives, there's conditioning from lifetimes, and all of a sudden material energy starts affecting us, and it starts affecting our mind, and there's sinful activity that's bubbling up in our mind. If we actually stay in the now consciousness and say, I won't sin now, I'll act in Krishna consciousness. If we constantly have that mentality, you won't sin. And if, because of conditioning, we fail in our attempts, and there is sinful activity, it's not that we hanker and lament of that past. We understand, because of our conditioned nature, we may have fallen down, we may have done sinful activity in our past. We don't hanker and lament for it. We don't stay in the past. Krishna doesn't want us to stay in the past and hanker over our mistakes. He wants us to stay in the present. Like so many great sages have said, you know, like even Jesus, in a sense, you know, when they came after Jesus and they said, oh, please, Lord, heal me. He said, yes, you're healed. And what's my instruction? Don't sin again. So even if we have, in the past, fallen by the wayside, that we've become deluded, and it's not such a, how can you say it, it's not such a great event. I mean, when you think about it, everything in this material world is geared towards you enjoying material life. And you are making an effort to break out of that. And so every now and again we may slip into our old consciousness. But if we act in the now, if we say, look, I sin, but today I'm not going to sin, and I stay in the present serving the Supreme Lord, you will make great advancement. The process is to refrain from sinful life, be Krishna conscious now, and everything will become absolute and pure. So that the emphasis is on us to actually make that endeavour. It's a simple process. If we allow it to be simple, we can't get caught up with so many different things and planning. You have also the example of people that cop out by saying, okay, I'll be Krishna conscious in the future. First, I'll make a lot of money. And when I make a lot of money, then I can do so much for Krishna consciousness. That's not the right attitude. Be Krishna conscious now. Offer your work as a service to God. If money comes, it's not your money anyway. If money comes, then you can use it in service to Krishna at that later stage. But don't be hankering, thinking, oh, I can't really perform my devotional service now. I have to wait until the future when things are right for me to perform. No, no. It means right now. And that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has to all of a sudden shave up and join the ashram and become part. That would be nice, but it's not necessary. We can do our work. We can do our work in our offices and our factories. Everything, if we just have it as a dedication to the Supreme Lord. If we just focus on this point, that it is an offering. Everything we do is an offering to the Supreme Lord. This is our yajna. And throw it at the Supreme Lord. So when we start our work, if we're in the now consciousness, if we're working in an IT situation, and we're sitting before the computer, we can do one of two things and just get into it. Or we can take just a minute out and just close your eyes, bring Krishna to your heart, and say, my Lord, I'm performing this activity for you. And then perform your activity. Do the work. Work for your boss, be a great employee. Do what you want to. And then when the employee is remunerated with a wage, you give X percent to Krishna. And Krishna doesn't want the whole lot. It's been pointed out throughout the whole Shastra. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't need your paltry wage. It's not like that. He needs your love. He needs your dedication. He needs your devotion. And so when the wage comes, you've made arrangement with Krishna's representative, your spiritual master or the temple authority, that yes, I will give 10% of my wage to Krishna. And if you act in that way, you're perfectly situated. There were times actually where Prabhupada encouraged people to give a certain percentage of their income. And one instance in particular, there was a gentleman who owned a shop, like a grocery store. And in that grocery store, they sold liquor as well. And the devotees came up to Prabhupada and said, "Oh, good Prabhupada, I mean, he's selling liquor in his shop." And Prabhupada was actually very munificent and said, "As long as he's giving something to the temple, he's rightly situated. And he's not taking intoxication, but he has to sell this stuff." So sometimes in our lives also, if we're working outside, there are so many different things that our company that we're working for is not necessarily following the principles as per se. But we have to work for this company. And so we have to do the needful. But if in a surrendered mood, in a conscious mood of offering, that I'm offering my work to the Lord and taking some for my material needs and giving some to Krishna, then you're rightly situated. And slowly, slowly you will grow in your Krishna consciousness. Slowly, slowly that connection with the Lord will bring you closer and closer, and you're able to do more and more. And as the realization comes to you, intuitively, through Krishna's mercy, through the spiritual master, through your spiritual master, through the shastras, and it's revealed to you, oh, now you can do this, and you can do this, and you can surrender in this way. And this can be your offering if you act in now consciousness and act on it, not to say, oh yeah, I'll put that off later. But if it's coming to you that there's a direction, then you should take it. And that is perfection. And you become purified, you become satisfied, you become happy. Because actually when you look at these poor unfortunate souls, as is mentioned here in this verse, the living entities that are poor unfortunate beings, deluded by the illusory maya, they're not happy. None of them are happy. They have a fleeting glimpse of happiness, just a fleeting glimpse. Oh, my footy team won this week, I'm so happy. And then they go back to work. How often is it, Prabhu, when we go to Gopal's? We're sitting there, and anyone that travels into the city, and you see their faces on the train coming from Flinders Street Station, they are morose. They are depressed. They are not happy. They're not happy campers. And when we see the devotees distributing books, you know, when I walk back from Gopal to go to the station, you see these guys and the ladies there, they're glowing, presenting Krishna, allowing a person to connect with Krishna in any way, shape or form, giving them a book, just chucking it in their hands, knowing they've just got to touch this book and they're saved, you know. They're glowing and they're like beacons in this mass of grey people. Mass of grey people. Even though they're not in their saffron dhotis or their bright saris or whatever, their faces are illumined. They are enlivened and fired up because they're in the fire of sacrifice to service to the Supreme Lord and Guru. And it's enlivening. So these materialists are not happy. None of them are happy. They have so many attachments, so many, they have fleeting bits of happiness. And ultimately what happens is these poor conditioned souls have to suffer and go back into a lower form of life. And this is the greatest sadness of all. That these living entities, these deluded souls who are hepped up, deluded by material energy, deluded by Maya, have to come back into the material realm as an animal, as a low form. And then you just have to wait. Wait your time. Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Then I get a dog's body, then I get a cat's body, then I get a this body. Because so often you see, you know, like animals, I mean, you see qualities of humans in animals. You know, when we had our little dog, Burfi, you know, I mean, there were qualities in him that you think, oh God, where were you in your last life? What did you do, you know? Like, you know, he would come every day when I was chanting my rounds in the morning, and I would let him in and he would sit just at the temple room and he wouldn't move, and the stereo was there where Prabhupada's chanting, you know, and he would, every day he would sit near where Prabhupada was chanting and I was chanting. And so you wonder, where's this dog from, you know? And he was caught up in, and by the mercy of the devotees, by giving him prasadam, he can get a human form of life next lifetime. So last lifetime, who knows? We could have been a little dog in another Vaishnava's house. And by his mercy, we're now getting the opportunity. But we're making the most of this Krishna consciousness. We're not just taking it for granted. We're grabbing it. Grabbing it in the now consciousness. I want to be Krishna conscious now. Prabhupada said you can be Krishna conscious like that. If we just apply the principle of really absorbing ourselves in the sacrifice, throwing ourselves at the sacrifice, throwing ourselves at the mercy of Guru and Krishna, and then real happiness comes. You know it's real happiness. We were talking last time I gave a class about samadhi, you know, bliss, spiritual bliss. Devotees get that. Whether they're cleaning the pots, whether they're cleaning something else, baby's nappies, whatever, devotees actually get bliss in all sorts of different ways. Real bliss. Real enlightened bliss. Real samadhi. And sometimes people find that hard to believe. When you speak to an impersonalist, they say, oh no, samadhi only comes by, oh, very rigorous. Oh yes, now we're experiencing samadhi. Devotees get a buzz, get the samadhi by serving the Supreme Lord. You know, we used to talk together, Korma and myself, and that's why I'm so happy to again be serving at Gopal's. When it's flat to the max, like it was yesterday, Prabhu, remember? Flat to the max and serving prasadam, knowing that every morsel that these people are taking is touching Krishna, bang, bang, we're giving them another hit, you know? And the devotees become an ecstasy, like Korma and myself used to be in ecstasy serving prasadam, knowing that the effect that Krishna is having on these people, it's just ecstatic. That you feel it rise up in you. You feel the samadhi, actually, that spiritual energy, that spiritual ecstasy, that bliss welling up. That you can hardly contain yourself, you know. And you look at each other and go, this is pretty good, isn't it? Out more prasadam. Or distributing books. Or sometimes you're in a kirtan, you know. We used to be in kirtan and there's like the most aggressive demons would come out of the woodwork, you know. And we would be in ecstasy because it's completely disturbing these people, you know. So it never impeded us. Or like, say, for example, when we had the Moomba float. Actually, we got a recognition from the Moomba committee appreciating our participation this year. But like the Moomba float, you know, doing that kirtan and just ecstatic and then coming back the other way, you know, and say, hang on, we haven't had enough of this yet. We're going to go back again. And the cop that was standing there, you know how I was walking on the side, there was this police lady. And she came up with me and she says, what's going on? You know, like she thought the whole procession was turning around and coming back. What are you guys doing? I said, we just can't get enough of this. Oh, okay. It's ecstatic. So the devotee has to look for the now of consciousness at all times. We have to find the nectar now. Look for it now. It's right there. And if you actually don't live in the past and the future, and live in that now consciousness, you'll experience it. So, anyway, I'll stop here. Any comments or questions at all? Okay, let me ask one. When was the enough moment for you? Can somebody describe their enough moment, when they had enough? Yes, Baba.
Yeah, I had heaps of them, but obviously not a true one, because I still haven't had enough. I'm still thinking, you know, there could be something out there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Something in what way? Something in what way? Something other than Krishna consciousness?
I don't think I could ever give up Krishna.
Good.
Yeah. If I was to go out and see, I would go mad, just because I've tried it and I can't stop thinking of Krishna.
Mm.
So, but it's definitely not enough yet.
Well, I think we're all in the same boat like that.
And if it's not enough, really, we'd be gone.
Absolutely. But it's developing on that enough moment. You know, as it's pointed out in the Shastra here, it makes us aware of it. We start to become conscious. We start to think, is this an enough moment? Have I had enough yet? You know? And you develop it. All of us, even after 30 years, you still, you know, have I had enough yet? And you go back. Yeah. Anybody else with an enough moment? It was an outstanding awakening. You had a question. What was the question?
You said that Prabhupada said that if you keep consciousness in 1 second,
yeah,
right now, you could just be conscious. So why is it so hard to be conscious all the time?
Because we're conditioned. Because we've got the material baggage. We've been conditioned for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And it's a slow process. For some people, it's automatic. Some people, it just make great advancement quickly. And other people, it just takes a little longer. But the main thing is that one another virtue of being a devotee is that they're patient and they're tolerant, and they just wait. And just wait. And stay as much as you can in the consciousness that I'll be as Krishna conscious as I can be now. Not that I'll be partially Krishna conscious, you know. Oh, I'll just hang in there. Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I'm turning around, you know. No, you actually grab your bee bag and with enthusiasm. You know, Prabhupada said one of the criteria for being a good devotee is that you're enthusiastic. You have to be enthusiastic, you have to be fired up. That fired up is actually, in a sense, a Hare Krishna terminology. Fired up, the jagya, you know, stoke that fire, become fired up to serve. So yeah, you just have to change that consciousness. Do the best you can, right now. What's the very best that you can do right now? So even right now. Let's stop right now. What is the very best you can do? The very best is not to fall asleep. It's to sort of perk up, have a straight back and listen and look around. Absorb the deities, absorb what's being said, and, you know, taking notes if need be, or just remembering. That's right now. Later on, when we're taking prasadam, what do? If you're in the now consciousness, you've got your plate of prasadam in front of you. What do? First of all, you're grateful that Krishna's giving you this food. Right? And then you're sampling each one, you're tasting. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, he wouldn't eat with other people. He would just sit in a room by himself with his plate and sample. It became a meditation to him. Not that we need to do that, but, you know, we'd relish it, being right now. Yeah?
About that prasadam part, isn't it an effect with visual things to other devotees when you're on a prasadam? Because one time we saw us walking with one lady and the
no,
you're
it's
talking,
not.
You're talking,
if your talk is uplifting and Krishna conscious, that's quite okay. And then if it's prajalpa and nonsense talk, you know, like, did you like the colour of my sari today? Or do you think I put my tilak on straight? Or what do you think about him? You know, that's Maya, and that shouldn't be done. You wouldn't do that in the deity room. If you're talking about Krishna, genuinely talking about Krishna, that's fine. Prabhupada liked light conversation, light Krishna conscious conversation. When you have, you know, sometimes you have an opportunity to have prasadam with some of the sannyasis that come through. They're cracking jokes all the time, Krishna conscious jokes. You know, Tamar Krishna Maharaj, he would say, Bhakta, come and take prasadam, you know. And we sit with him, and I'm like in awe and reverence of Maharaj, especially to Mahakrishna Maharaj. You just sort of sit there, yes, Maharaj. How's it going? You know, and he'd be like very light, wasn't that Prabhu? Very light and easy, you know? So, yes, Prabhu.
I remember, I heard the story that Mahakrishna Maharaj was together with Sri Dayananda Maharaj, you remember? Mahakrishna Maharaj was complaining because, Rudananda Raj was eating his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
And saying, why don't you just eat the baby? And Sri Krishna was saying, why don't you just eat the baby diet, rice, dal, sabjis, and chapatis? And Rudananda Raj said, I've got my chapati, the bread is like the chapati. No, the peanut butter is like the dal. And the jam is like
the chutney.
So then that way, like Sri Krishna said, okay, I'll get up.
And like, those two would crack up all the time between the two of them, you know? So, yeah. And Bhakti Charu Maharaj is coming when you have prasadam with him. He starts talking about the films he's making and, you know, he's concerned about your welfare and so on and so forth. Light conversation is good. But you still remain focused. And every now and again, you know, like you'd have the prakora and, you know, you don't, being in the now consciousness, you don't criticise prasadam. You don't say, oh, who cooked this? You know, oh, God, there's nothing. You know, you don't. You don't. It's prasadam. You just, if it's very spicy and it's too spicy for you, you just go, that was spicy, and you just put it to the side. You know, it's just normal, but you have to keep it light. But you know, and then after you've had your prasadam, you've got to go to your work, whatever. And some of us have to go in the train. You know. Now you can be Krishna conscious and get a Monday newspaper and start reading the paper like everybody else. You know. Oh, what are the footy scores? And oh, yeah, this is happening over there. Or you can pop in your thing, you can listen to a nice lecture, listen to a nice kirtan, read a book, or preach to somebody sitting next to you. Harsha was on the train the other day. Harsha's a very good friend of ours. He was in the train, and this was his first time that he did book distribution. He had to tell me about it. You know, he was sitting in the book, and all of a sudden he was reading Krishna Conscious book, and there was an Indian gentleman over the other side of the train, and he was like, God, all of a sudden he had an intuition. Krishna from within said, you've got to give this guy a book. And he's going, I can't give this guy a book. You know, he became really self-conscious, you know. And he got to his station, he goes, I've got to give this guy a book. So he got his book and he goes, I've got to give you this. The guy goes, thank you. Who knows where that's going to go? But he worked, you know, the now consciousness was, he had to be Krishna conscious now, he had to distribute the book. So, yes, Prabhu?
I remember I experienced enough. I was travelling around Australia and I met the devotees in Perth. And I was going to the temple and straight away, like the first day, I started following the regular principles. I was there for about a month and then I drove back to my home place in New South Wales. And somehow, you know, I was visiting the temple in Sydney, but some old friend, he tricked me into going to a friend's place and taking some marijuana and then, you know, I got intoxicated and then I had to drive the car. And for the life of me, I just like must have been so intoxicated I couldn't seem to open the door, you know, because I didn't get the key and it seemed to take about half an hour just to open the door and I was like really petrified thinking, oh no, I'm going to have an accident, I'm going to go straight to hell, I've got to join the Hare Krishnas otherwise I'm going to hell straight away.
Oh, wow.
Somehow I didn't have an accident and I joined a couple of days later and I made that resolute determination, if I don't join I'm going to go to hell, you know, because of all the nonsense.
Wow, Jai, awesome. Now you're going back over God, and we're hanging on to your lotus feet, mate. Anybody else from us? Any questions or comments? Mahatma, you had a question?
One comment was, I like you saying it, now or never.
No. That's it. There's that old song, oh no, let's not get started. That's my attachment. Old songs, you know that when on this go past, old songs come into you, you've got to try and Krishnize it. So being in the now, you change the tune, you know? Some old melody comes into your mind. Krishna conscious.
I have one question. You wanted to say something about animal sacrifices? Because we used to go to get them to get higher body. In the fire sacrifice?
Yeah, I really don't know about that, Prabhu. Yes.
I have one question. Yeah, you're saying, hallowed be thy name.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Hallowed means praise. Hallowed is like placing it on an incredibly high pedestal.
Right.
In actual fact, that wasn't Jesus' prayer. Right. Although the Christians say that he was the author of that verse, it was actually his guru. who was a rabbi, Jewish rabbi, can't remember his name, but it was his prayer, he made it, and because he was a devout follower of his guru, he also said that prayer. But hallowed be thy name is, you know, praising and placing the holy name on a high pedestal.
So it's not like hello.
No, hallowed is H-A-L-L-O-W-E-D. Hallowed be thy name. It's not hello, it's hello name. No, it's very nice. Well, it is in a way,
yeah.
You know. Hello name. And that's what we do when we hear the holy name. Hello name. Yeah. But that's what it is, placing it on a high pedestal, praising it, adoring it. And the holy name that they had was Jehovah or Illinois, which Prabhupada said are bona fide names of God. Not as great as Krishna. Krishna has millions and millions of names. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Prabhu. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada.